Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
I'm Kimberly Atkinstore, and this is On Point.
This was by far the most upsetting, unpleasant ticket buying experience I've ever had.
Last week, the pre-sale for Taylor Swift's 2023 tour broke Ticketmaster.
I signed up for the pre-sale, did all the work, even had my computer on that website for hours, at least 24 hours in advance, and I kept refreshing. And then it basically crashed. I was so worried and devastated and frankly really frustrated. I assumed that they make tons of money, and I would think that their apps, everything would be working a heck of a lot better than they did.
The most frustrating part is that Ticketmaster supplied the verified fan codes. So they knew how many verified fan codes they sent out. They should have been ready for those numbers.
Ever experienced a thing like that where you would think that you had gotten pre-sale access, that it shouldn't have been an issue at all to get tickets, and here we are without anything after trying three separate times?
We had to pay at least $500 for tickets in the stand, and we were at this point forced to get a VIP package because that's all there was, plus all the service fees. It ended up being $600 a ticket. Like, we paid it because we want to see her that bad, but it's still wrong.
I couldn't even tell you the number of times I've been locked out a minute after tickets go on sale because somehow tickets are gone almost instantly for big shows.
I'm actually very grateful for this Taylor Swift-inspired Ticketmaster fiasco because what it's done is unveil what has been a very, very long and frustrating process for music lovers of other bands for decades now.
It's just not feasible for anybody to get tickets anymore. And my husband and I, we used to know all the secrets. And when our daughter begs for tickets to see her favorite band, with all of the tricks we know, we still can't get through to get her a ticket. Things just have to change. It's not right. It's not fair.
On Point listeners Tracy O'Brien from La Cañada, Flint Ridge, California, Ann Francis from Seattle, Lori Ott from Orlando, John Shetler from Pella, Iowa, Kristen Martin from Denver, Colorado, Kimberly Napoli from Sudbury, Massachusetts, and Linda Pugh from Buffalo, New York, all expressing their frustration and bewilderment at the Taylor Swift fiasco and Ticketmaster in particular. A lot of that anger can be traced back to 2010, when two giants in the live music industry, Ticketmaster, the largest ticketing company, and Live Nation, the largest concert promoter, were allowed to merge. So today, we want to explore how this merger has impacted the industry and what can be done to improve the live performance industry for everyone. We're joined by Krista Brown. She's a senior policy analyst at the American Economic Liberties Project. She's also co-author of the report, How Antitrust Enforcers Helped Create a Live Events Monster. You can find a link to that report at our website, onpointradio.org. She's joining us from Boston. Welcome to On Point, Krista.
Thank you for having me.
So long before the Taylor Swift fiasco last week, your organization has been part of an initiative called Break Up Ticketmaster. Explain what that is and how it came about.
Yeah, so to give some context, my organization is an anti-monopoly organization, meaning we look at harms of consolidation across the economy. And for the past 2 years, we've dug into the harms of Ticketmaster. This fall, we really saw an opportunity to formalize our efforts and kind of bring together other coalition members because there was the political interest. And then we have the public interest from, you know, Bruce Springsteen fans that saw crazy prices over the summer. And then we just have strong leadership right now. With Jonathan Cantor and Lena Khan, the heads of the antitrust agencies, we see that if there is going to ever be an opportunity to break up this company, now is the time to really go for it. And the coalition itself is made up of really strong members that have been working on this effort for a very long time, longer than ourselves. And we're just excited to elevate the voices of artists, venues, independent promoters, and others. So thanks for having me again.
And who is this campaign aimed at? Is it aimed at the DOJ to push for enforcement? Is it aimed at lawmakers? Tell us a little bit how it works.
Yeah, so the campaign right now is really just, well, first of all, I just want to say we did not realize we would get this far so early. Ticketmaster did the work for us by making it so easy to get the public interested. But we, you know, our first effort was getting the DOJ's attention and making them kind of feel enough pressure to really go after this company. And we've seen that with the announcement on Friday of them having an investigation underway. But we also just think it's important for Congress members to continue with the pressure, for the public to be aware of the monopolistic abuses that Ticketmaster introduces, but also where it comes up in other parts of the market. So we're going to continue to educate the public, bring in more voices, and help do the work to propel the DOJ's efforts and make sure that they bring their investigation to fruition.
So I want to, during the course of this hour, sort of walk through what happened and why. But first, I want us to hear from Greg Maffei. He's the CEO of Liberty Media, Live Nation's largest shareholder. In an interview last week, Maffei told NBC that Live Nation was deeply sorry for what happened last week to Taylor Swift fans, but says the issue came down to unprecedented demand.
Reality is, it's a function of the massive demand that Taylor Swift has. The site was supposed to be opened up for 1.5 million verified Taylor Swift fans. We had 14 million people hit the site, including bots, another story, which are not supposed to be there. And despite all the challenges and the breakdowns, we did sell over 2 million tickets that day. We could have filled 900 stadiums. And the reality is this is not actually a Live Nation promoted concert. Taylor Swift is promoted by one of our largest competitors.
That competitor is AEG. Now, I want to say that we reached out to both Ticketmaster and Live Nation, and while they didn't respond directly to us, they directed us to lengthy statements they have released. Live Nation's statement reads, in part, for the past 12 years, Live Nation has operated under a consent decree that, among other things, seeks to prevent anti-competitive leveraging of Live Nation promoted content to advantage Ticketmaster. They say that they voluntarily entered that consent decree in 2020. In its statement, also very lengthy, Ticketmaster apologized to Taylor Swift fans and said, in part, the biggest venues and artists turn to us because we have the leading ticketing technology in the world. That doesn't mean it's perfect. And clearly for Taylor Swift on sale, it wasn't. Krista, I want to talk about that. They're both apologetic, but they're both saying, look, this was a massive event. The demand was so high. We've already been under a consent decree, and we did the best we could. What do you say to those statements?
Yeah, there are kind of a few things going on here. First and foremost, I would say we wouldn't have seen the results that we did if there wasn't such a bottleneck issue. So if there was multiple ticketing services that people could turn to, and to be fair, there were, you know, very few venues, I believe five, were sold under a different ticketing service. But for the rest of them, they were all using Ticketmaster. And it's not because it was promoted by Ticketmaster, but it's because Ticketmaster has exclusive contracts with the venues that she was going to. And that's because they have exclusive contracts with 80% of the largest venues. So despite her potentially trying to use an alternative, she can't really get around them. And going back to that bottleneck issue, you know, when you have one sole source of entry, you can't really handle capacity. And we have antitrust laws that are meant to maintain competition and deal with these issues and make sure that customers don't have to engage with just one supplier. But unfortunately, that is kind of the case today. And that's what we saw for Taylor Swift fans.
Taylor Swift also responded in part. She said, there are a multitude of reasons why people had such a hard time trying to get tickets, and I'm trying to figure out how this situation can be improved moving forward. I'm not going to make excuses for anyone because we asked them multiple times if they could handle this kind of demand, and we were assured that they could. When you have acts as popular as Taylor Swift, just how can this kind of demand be handled? I remember back in the day when I was a teenager, we would stand outside a box office and wait till, you know, the window opened at 10 o'clock and buy our tickets that way. But this is done online now with people seeking tickets from all over the world. Is it possible to handle this type of demand?
Well, I think it gets back at what I was saying earlier of just having various options, right? So if you don't want to engage with Ticketmaster, if you're being told that you're behind 2,000 people, you should have another place to turn to. And that has been the case in other industries. It's been the case in history. Back in the 90s, there were a few competitors, you know, not many, again, because they were still a large company back then. But there were more than predominantly solely them. I also think that it's important to note that Ticketmaster doesn't feel the need to invest in their product because they don't feel competitive pressures. So they likely could invest, make their, you know, the pillars of their service stronger to deal with all of this. And as Taylor Swift said, they kind of promised her that. But without the need to do it, they might as well just put that money into their shareholders' pockets. And I think that that's what they're doing.
And Taylor Swift isn't the first artist to shed light on this issue. Others such as Bruce Springsteen and Pearl Jam have also had their beefs with Ticketmaster. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so Pearl Jam is a story from history that is pretty sad, but also kind of highlights how long this has been going on. Back in the early 90s, they went on tour and they felt very adamant about making their various concerts affordable to the public, some of them free, some of them they just wanted to keep below $20. But given Ticketmaster's ability to kind of maintain fees and maintain exclusive contracts with venues, it meant that they were up against this ticketing service. So they would go to various venues, say, we don't want the service charge to be X percent. We want it cheaper because we want all of our tickets to be affordable. And they just weren't able to do that because of Ticketmaster's power.
I'm going to pause you right there. We're discussing how last week's Taylor Swift presale disaster sparked concerns about the 2010 merger of Ticketmaster and Live Nation and what lawmakers can and should do about it. I'm Kimberly Atkins-Store. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Kimberly Atkins-Store. Jack Orban started Stone City Attractions back in 1972. The San Antonio-based concert promoter began quite small, with Jack working out of his garage apartment. But it quickly grew, later booking big names like Journey, The Rolling Stones, U2, and Bob Dylan.
We were into the music. We wanted to keep the tickets prices low. We wanted value to the consumer. To us, the concert goer was even more important than the artist. Like, well, I used to personally tell them, the artists, when they said it, when they would say something like, well, if we weren't here, you wouldn't be here. And I'd say, if the crowd wasn't here, neither one of us would be here.
Business was going really well until his industry started to get more and more consolidated. And in 2009, when Ticketmaster, the largest ticketing company, and Live Nation, the largest concert promoter, wanted to merge, Jack was worried.
One of the selling points of the monopoly was that they would handle things the same all the way through and find out whatever idiosyncrasies the band, the artist had, they could handle all the way through, and you wouldn't have to go through, you know, 20 different promoters. And that was a benefit that was offered to the artists from the conglomerates. And there is some truth to the fact that that is worthwhile to a certain extent. But at what cost?
Despite considerable opposition, the merger was approved by the U.S. Justice Department in 2010. And Jack's question, at what cost, was answered.
independent promoters, the handful that were left, or less than handful perhaps, that were major, you know, had a hard time with getting major acts to play for us, because what would happen is the conglomerate would buy, and still does, buy the entire tours, and whatever markets they didn't want would be available. You know, most of the major ones, more profitable, were taken, and therefore it was extremely tough to compete with the synergy of the ticketing and the concert promoters merger.
Because Jack had nearly four decades of experience before the merger, he was able to still get enough business to stay afloat. But, he says, it's nearly impossible to break into this market today.
And I don't really blame Ticketmaster for merging with the world's biggest promoter. The synergy makes good corporate business sense, and it did easily raise their market share, that's for sure. But it wasn't good for the consumer. And that's what we said from the beginning, that this is all going to be boiled down to a problem for the consumer, because there won't be competition. There'll be higher ticket prices. There'll be less tickets available to the general public and fewer independent promoters. And independent promoters increase the diversity in the music market. New and different blood is needed in any industry to keep it robust, but no different for the live entertainment industry, that's for sure.
He thinks the blame falls on the federal government. He says they never should have approved the Ticketmaster Live Nation merger and thinks they should break it up. Jack Orban got out of the for-profit concert promotion business in 2015. He did so mostly for personal reasons, but said the consolidated market and the state of the industry today definitely played a part. This hour, we're discussing how last week's Taylor Swift presale disaster has sparked concerns about that 2010 merger of Ticketmaster and Live Nation, the two largest ticketing and concert promoting companies in the business, and what regulators and lawmakers should or can do about it. We're joined by Krista Brown. She's senior policy analyst at the American Economic Liberties Project. And we're also joined now by Andre Barlow. He's an antitrust attorney in Washington, D.C. Welcome to On Point, Andre.
Hey, thanks for having me. Nice to talk to both of you, Kimberly and Krista.
And so, Andre, the Senate Judiciary Committee held a hearing in February 2009 to discuss the proposed mergers. Back then, were there concerns about the merger, and what was the general case for and against it?
Yeah, sure. You know, this is really embarrassing. You know, because all of these concerns and all of these, you know, stories that we've been hearing today on your show, none of this is new. When we go back to 2009 in that judiciary hearing and what the Department of Justice was investigating at the time with the proposed merger, the only thing that was really different was that, you know, back there, Ticketmaster held a monopoly in ticket sales market. And the difference is that Live Nation was entering into the ticket distribution market. So they would have provided some real competition to Ticketmaster, which it had not had, because Ticketmaster even back then had about 80% market share. So they still do. So, you know, it was a straightforward competitive effects case that, you know, it was horizontal competition. It was a merger that would eliminate a new nascent competitor, but one that would have had the wherewithal to actually compete against Ticketmaster. So that's the only thing that's different from then and now. These other proposed or these other concerns that we're hearing, they're called what we would call in the antitrust world vertical anti-competitive effects or vertical harm. These vertical concerns all existed back then. You know, so there was a concern that if Ticketmaster were to, you know, acquire, you know, the dominant firm and marquee concert promotion, that, you know, that merged firm would be able to foreclose competition, you know, in both markets. So, you know, we were concerned about the diminished competition in primary ticket distribution. We were also concerned about diminished competition in independent concert promotion. So none of this is new. And then, you know, we're concerned also about the reduced competition among ticket resellers. And we know that, you know, Ticketmaster still operates in that space. So, yeah. You know, none of this is new. So that's what's really unfortunate about, you know, what's going on here.
I want to play some sound from Irving Azoff, who was the former CEO of Ticketmaster, when he testified before the Senate Judiciary Committee back in February of 2009 to make the case for the proposed merger between Ticketmaster and Live Nation. His pitch was simple. It could make things more efficient.
The merger will let us fully integrate our complementary strengths and eliminate about $40 million in inefficiencies, money that could be invested in more innovation. It is designed to address the obvious inefficiencies in the entertainment supply chain, the large volume of unsold tickets to events, higher costs, surcharges, and especially the explosion of the resale market.
Michael Rapino, the CEO of Live Nation at the time, wasn't so much focused on efficiencies, but rather saving a troubled industry.
Computer-driven bulk purchases suck tickets out of the primary market and deny fans a chance to see their favorite performers. Fans pay more, but the performers, the promoters, and the venues don't get a dime. And fans who never get a chance to buy a ticket at face value are rightfully angry. The scalpers of today are the piracies of yesterday. Our business is bleeding, and the real victim is the artist. The artist makes music, and others steal and exploit it. Clinging to the old ways and fighting change is not the answer. Together with artists, local promoters, venue, and my new partner Irving, we want to offer solutions. We have an opportunity to create a truly modern business by putting these companies together. Far from harming consumers or promoters or artists, this deal will benefit them as we spur competition and innovation.
Michael Rapino became the CEO of Live Nation Entertainment, Inc., the company that was created when Ticketmaster and Live Nation merged in 2010, and he's still the CEO today. So, Krista, was it that these arguments about efficiency, about allowing better access to tickets, fans to get what they pay for when they pay for these fees, were these what made the DOJ approve this merger? And how important do you think these points are that they were making then?
Yeah, I unfortunately don't think that any of the arguments they were making really held water, even at the time. You know, Azoff previously had started this company, Frontline Management, which was the largest artist management company that Ticketmaster acquired the year before. And as Andre said, at that point, Live Nation was considering becoming a direct competitor. So these two companies, and really three that got wrapped up into two, were kind of just towing the line of, do we compete or do we just consolidate and kind of join forces to monopolize the space? And again, I do not think in any way it made sense for them to argue they were spurring competition. But the regulators at the time were pretty susceptible to just using very light touch enforcement, and that's what they did. So it's sort of the status quo if you look back at their reputation as regulators. And unfortunately, it just allowed the company to consolidate and monopolize the space.
And Andre, on that point of enforcement, as I read part of Live Nation's statement earlier, which talked about the fact that it is under a consent decree that prevents it from anti-competitive leveraging, and these guardrails that we're talking about, are they enough? And if not, why are they not working?
Well, let me say this about merger remedies. They're very difficult to craft, right? So if you're a regulator, and the job really for the DOJ Antitrust Division is merger enforcement. But what ended up happening here is that they went from, right, the way that you really should act in terms of merger enforcement is to block transactions when they are anti-competitive. But what has happened over the years, and it's not just Ticketmaster Live Nation, but in other transactions as well, is that the division gets into the business of negotiating remedies. And there are structural remedies and behavioral remedies. So structural remedies are when we can fix the anti-competitive merger by having a divestiture. And then with the other part, where we're talking about behavioral conditions, those are much more difficult to craft. And I think that is the problem, right? So once they decided to allow this merger, they had a combination of divestitures and behavioral conditions. But those behavioral conditions can never be perfect, right? Because you're talking about antitrust lawyers trying to draft these remedies within a consent decree. And you have the merging parties, which know their business much better than the antitrust lawyers do. So you get these behavioral conditions that are written, and they're not perfectly clear. They're ambiguous. We all know what the intent was of the consent decree, right? To prevent leveraging, prevent anti-competitive behavior, or I would say items that violate the spirit of competition, right? I mean, the conduct that violates the spirit of competition is what we're really aiming for. Yet, when we write these consent decrees, both the government and the parties are held to the letter of the agreement. And that is the real problem, is that, once you're held to that, there's a real concern of whether the antitrust division can enforce it. Right. So
yeah,
behavioral remedies are just difficult to monitor and difficult to enforce. And I think that's the problem we've had here.
I want to get to how this has affected smaller artists. Lawrence is a U.S.-based pop soul group founded by siblings Clyde and Gracie Lawrence. And the band has been pretty vocal about their qualms with how the music industry handles concerts and ticketing. And last month, they hosted a live event on Instagram in which they talked about how they don't have much leverage in making deals on tours or how much they make from their merchandise or even how tickets are sold. The problem they kept going back to was the Ticketmaster Live Nation merger. Here's Clyde Lawrence during that Instagram live event.
We do come in and say, we have a full-fledged ticket company that we've created that allows us to give our fans way cheaper fees, makes everybody happy, allows us to have a direct connection with our fans, a million different reasons why it's good. And they just say, no, we have to use Ticketmaster. It's a Live Nation venue, we're using Ticketmaster. So all these other great ticket companies, it's great that they exist, but they're sort of irrelevant in the grand scheme of things until Live Nation venues are not exclusively dominating the market and exclusively requiring you to use Ticketmaster.
Catherine Dickel is a founder and CEO of Midwest Tickets, a small ticketing company based out of Des Moines, Iowa. We got in touch with her after she left us a message on the On Point Vox Pop app. She started the company back in 2000 and says her primary market is mid-range festivals and fairs. She said she'd like to get more into the larger concert scene, but with Ticketmaster and Live Nation's share of the market, it's really difficult. She remembers a few years ago, she bid for a ticketing gig at a local concert venue in town, and despite her asking bid being a lot lower than Ticketmaster's, they went with Ticketmaster.
We were literally like, our office was right around the corner from this venue. And this is like one of Des Moines' biggest local venues, right? So we're a local company, we're a women-owned tech business, we came in super low, we had, 15 years under our belt of ticketing. We have on the ground support literally right around the corner. Like, there's no reason that we shouldn't have gotten this gig, right? But what we were told was that if they were going to go with us, then they would not get shows that Ticketmaster promoters would be bringing into their venue because they use Ticketmaster and they didn't want to put those on the line.
So, Krista, is there really competition at all? I mean, if people, independent ticketing companies are coming in with lower bids, it doesn't feel very competitive if they're not getting those bids.
Yeah, I think that's right. You know, part of the behavioral remedy that Andre was describing was one to ensure anti-retaliation metrics where Ticketmaster wouldn't do exactly what she just described, which is threaten venues by saying, our Live Nation tours are not going to come into your venue if you don't also use our ticketing service. But the consent decree absolutely failed. You know, they were found in violation. I believe six anonymous venues and promoters came up complaining to the DOJ. And that's why they claim to have voluntarily reentered the consent decree in 2020 and it extended it about 5 years, but there really isn't competition. We hear the story over and over. And as Clyde from Lawrence mentioned, it really harms fans. You know, artists want to be directly in touch with their fans. They want to provide affordable fees, just as Pearl Jam did in the 90s. But regulators have just not given them the ability to do that.
And is that part of how the consent decrees were crafted, how the enforcement has gone so far? Was that guaranteed to happen from the start?
Yeah, it was intended that way. The anti-retaliation behavioral remedy was to say you cannot threaten in this way. You cannot kind of force venues to use your services and bundle them, but that's exactly what they did.
We're going to ask you to hold right there. We're discussing how last week's Taylor Swift presale disaster sparked concerns about the 2010 merger between Ticketmaster and Live Nation. I'm Kimberly Atkins-Store. This is On Point.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
This is On Point. I'm Kimberly Atkins-Store. Next week, On Point is diving deep into the topic of trust. Essential trust, what trust is, why we need it, and what happens when it's lost is a week-long series exploring how trust is created in the individual human brain, then scaled up to the trust we have in people, institutions, and societies at large. Join us as we investigate what makes our capacity to trust uniquely precious, uniquely human, and worthy of our protection. And you can help us do that. If you've lost trust at one point in your life and had to rebuild it, what did it take to do that? Has someone lost trust in you? What was that like? Tell us your story at 617-353-0683 or leave us a message in broadcast quality by downloading the On Point app. Just search for On Point Vox Pop. That's On Point VOXPOP in your app store or click on the Connect tab at onpointradio.org. Today, we're discussing how last week's Taylor Swift presale disaster has sparked concerns about the 2010 merger between Ticketmaster and Live Nation and what regulators and lawmakers can or should do about it. We're joined by Krista Brown, senior policy analyst at the American Economic Liberties Project, and Andre Barlow, an antitrust attorney in D.C. Andre, I want to talk a little bit about the point about Ticketmaster and the resale market that was brought up briefly a little bit earlier. And what, if anything, does that add to the issues that we've been talking about? The last time I tried, I actually used Ticketmaster was back before the pandemic, when the pandemic was beginning. The concert that I had tickets for hadn't been canceled yet, but Ticketmaster gave me the option to sell the tickets back to them. How does that work, and where does this all factor in?
You know, it's a real problem, this resale market, because Ticketmaster makes a lot of money in that market as well. And again, that was one of the issues even back in 2009, that there was a concern about the resale market. So this is just another additional problem presented, by Ticketmaster and its combination with Live Nation. that they have an incentive, not just on the initial distribution of the tickets, but an incentive to be in this resale business because they generate more fees. So it is another aspect of this when we're talking about the vertical transaction that occurred. It is still one of the anti-competitive effects that still exists today, they can still maintain some power in that resale market and leverage against other resellers, which is, you know, another anti-competitive harm. So this is just one of the other harms besides the initial distribution and besides the dominance in the concert promotion.
Yeah, and I can confirm that the process of selling those tickets back did come with a fee. In February 2020, the House Committee on Energy and Commerce held a hearing on the live event ticketing industry. Amy Howe, president and COO of Ticketmaster at the time, testified that the biggest problem facing the industry was bots. Bots are automated ticket buying software that allows one to access thousands of tickets within seconds and then resell them on the secondary market for a hefty markup.
Since 2018, Ticketmaster has blocked over 30 billion bot purchase attempts. We do this because we fundamentally believe tickets should go to fans at the price determined by the artist. We've also developed innovative technologies like Verified Fan and SmartQ to weed out bots and bad actors, and we supported the 2016 Bots Act, which made bots illegal. Despite the massive investments we've made to help fans get fair access to tickets, we know this alone will not solve the problem, which is why we strongly support bolstering the Bots Act with more rigorous enforcement.
In a 2016 report from the New York Attorney General's office on December 8, 2014, when tickets for the rock band U2 first went on sale, a single broker purchased 1,012 tickets to one show at Madison Square Garden in a single minute, despite the ticket vendor's claim of a, quote, four-ticket limit. By the end of the day, the same broker and one other had amassed more than 15,000 tickets to U2 shows across North America. That same New York Attorney General's report said that things like pre-sales and holds also take up so much of the ticket availability that only about 46% of tickets are reserved for the public. Krista, I want your thoughts on this. How does Ticketmaster do a better job of A, stopping bots that we heard Amy Howe talking about, but also allowing fans to have access to these tickets and not big corporations?
Yeah, I think they love to kind of go out on a PR campaign saying how much they work against these efforts, when in fact their actions show they're pretty intertwined. So back in 2010, they had bought a company called Tickets Now, which was the second largest secondary marketplace behind StubHub. And with a Bruce Springsteen concert, all of these fans became aware that they were being redirected to Tickets Now within moments of the tour being on sale. And Ticketmaster kind of had this pop-up message saying there's troubles of inventory, but we might have some tickets available, with a button to redirect you to the secondary market where prices were 3 to 4 times higher. And the trouble with that is not only the fact that they were lying and deceiving fans, which the FTC sued them for, and they had to pay money back to those fans, but also because once it's on the secondary market, all of that markup is going into their pockets, and it's not going into the pockets of the artists. So they're really robbing these artists that they say they're supporting of the money that they're owed, because they never even make the sale on the primary in the first place.
Mm. So what can be done? We heard Amy Howe calling for legislation to help combat bots. What else do you think that lawmakers and regulators need to do to get to the heart of this issue?
I think ultimately the first step to even begin to introduce a fairly competitive marketplace is breaking Live Nation and Ticketmaster up, which is why we had a pretty simple ask in our campaign, but also because that's how you then begin to get some competition. You begin to see fans feeling like they have choice and artists having more leverage so that they actually can engage with other providers, not only on the venue promotion, but also on ticketing. And it will basically force Ticketmaster into feeling obliged to act in the right way versus saying, yeah, we'd love transparency or we'd love to kind of regulate against this secondary market, but we can say that and do something completely different because we're not afraid that we're going to lose any of the customer base that we have kind of within our grasp.
And before we talk a little bit more about solutions, I want to read a little bit about what our listeners have been saying to us. Kylie Ohl on Twitter writes, yes, goal to buy Taylor Swift Eras Tour tickets was squashed by the incompetence of Ticketmaster. From Facebook, Jason Beal writes, I am still waiting now month three for them to pay me for tickets I sold on their site. Customer service is non-existent. Can't call anyone. Generic emails. Vernon Poirier says on Facebook, I don't go to shows anymore because of Ticketmaster them and ticket prices in general. So Andre, you know, at the beginning, some of our listeners said it's Swifties that are going to get some action. How easy would it be? We've already seen break up Ticketmaster trending on social media. What might that process look like? Can the DOJ give this merger another look and think about undoing it and how?
Well, they can, and it's not as difficult as you would think. You know, I think the DOJ and the FTC combined have challenged over 50 consummated mergers in the past 20 years. So it does happen quite a bit. The Federal Trade Commission is currently litigating against Meta, you know, Facebook, for its acquisitions of Instagram and WhatsApp. So this is not unheard of. And those acquisitions, by the way, happened, you know, eight, 9 years ago. So this is not unheard of. You have two separate companies in terms of Live Nation being a concert promoter, and you have Ticketmaster with its ticket distribution business and reselling business. So they are separate companies that could be divested from each other. So what it would require is an investigation by the Department of Justice, which we know that they are currently investigating, but you know they can either look to their consent decree that they have on the books that goes for another 3 years or so, or they can actually sue to undo the deal. And like I said, this is kind of a regular occurrence. It's done quite a bit. And I think it could be done here as well, because what you're talking about, when you bring a case like this, a vertical transaction case or vertical harm case, what we're constantly looking at is, you know, are the parties dominant in two, you know, the upstream and the downstream markets? And here, Ticketmaster has 80% market share. And then you have Live Nation being the dominant concert promoter for these marquee names. So it's kind of an easy case to tell a story when you get into court. And they could certainly block it.
And Crystal, or undo what it. Yes. And what would be the motivators to make DOJ take another look at this? Do you think that this fiasco with the Taylor Swift tickets, I'm sure someone in the DOJ was either trying to get tickets or had their family members were. Is this something that will move that needle?
Yeah, I think it kind of already has with the announcement on Friday or the breaking news from New York Times. I don't know that the timeline for them explaining that investigation was to be on Friday, but I think it was in response, likely, to the Taylor Swift fans. And I think that just continuing to hear from the public, obviously, it will be hard to get as much info as we did from the saga of Taylor Swift, but we did get 50 letters. You know, I think on Friday, we only had about 20,000 letters, but we now have 50,000 letters sent to the Department of Justice. And we have interest from Congress members that are speaking out on social media as well as through letters. We have, you know, a hearing now set in place. Amy Klobuchar is really kind of on social media, explained that she'd like to spearhead that, making sure that it doesn't go unaddressed. And then state attorneys general are also very interested, and they have heard from the citizens. They would like to continue to kind of address the complaints. And with all of that pressure, it'll be very hard for the Department of Justice to kind of just sweep aside the harms that are being spoken about.
Krista, there's also been legislation that has been introduced several times over the years, including the Better Oversight of Secondary Sales and Accountability in Concert Ticketing Act, which breaks down to the BOSS Act. That's not by coincidence. It was pushed by Bruce Springsteen because of the Ticketmaster issues he had back in 2009. What would this legislation do, and why hasn't it passed in all this time?
Yeah, you know, the BOSS Act, it is a good start. However, given we heard Ticketmaster's people saying that they are kind of promoting it, it does give me hesitation to think that it will actually address the real problems here. It introduces transparency, asking Ticketmaster, but all ticketing services, to talk about where the money's going, talk about what the fees are kind of upfront, and then also say, if you are the primary ticketing service, are you also the secondary service, the venue owner? Kind of how integrated are you as the seller that the customer is engaging with? And then also kind of low bar regulations, which are that you can't sell the same seat twice. You know, it's kind of like the airlines. It's crazy that we even got to a place that this was happening. But it does bring the regulation around these extremely anti-competitive behaviors up a step. I just think it's probably not enough to bring competition in a healthy way. So the breakup is really what we're going for. And then the BOSS Act would be great once we have a competitive and kind of equal playing field.
And Andre, quickly before we run out of time, do you think that there is the political appetite to get anything done in the legislative level? And do you think new laws are needed?
Well, I think there is some political appetite. New laws are needed, but I agree that that what is really necessary is a breakup of the two companies, or I mean of the merged firm, and make them into two companies, because that is the only way that you're going to solve all of these problems, because a lot of it is related to the market power that they have in concert promotion and into ticket distribution. So yes, legislation would help. Yes, it helps when the FTC, Consumer Protection Bureau, is taking action on some of these, ticket prices and fees. But what is more important is actually making a big push to the antitrust division to get them to act.
Hmm. And Krista, the last word to you. Are there any examples of what the market might look like if Ticketmaster and Live Nation are broken up? For example, the British Premier League don't have that sort of collusion, but these are also, we're dealing with grass fields, not assigned seats. Is there anything we can turn to about what it might look like post breakup if it happens?
Yeah, that's a great example to bring up. You know, because of the grass fields, they are not going to be hosting these large artists. And so Live Nation's ability to kind of leverage the bundling service is no longer there. And Ticketmaster in the British Premier League only has less than half of the contracts. And there are other ticketing services that probably, because of a merit-based competitive field, are able to dominate the market slightly more and have fair competition. And I hope that we get there ourselves.
Krista Brown is a senior policy analyst at the American Economic Liberties Project. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And Andre Barlow is an antitrust attorney in Washington, D.C. Thanks for joining us, Andre.
Thank you.
I'm Kimberly Atkins-Store. This is On Point.